From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruriak. California's public utilities are a critical voice in the state's debate about wildfires. And if you heard our program yesterday, you know that public utilities have essentially tripled the amount that they're spending on lobbying in light of changing wildfire policy. So from minimizing risk to responding to emergencies to assessing and determining responsibility for damages, public utilities have been in the hot seat, so to speak, and the statewide agency that oversees the utility companies is the California Public Utilities Commission. In the studio with me is the president of the CPUC, Michael Picker. Commissioner, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Glad to have you here. How much has the wildfire problem in California caught public utilities by surprise, in a way?
I think that the recent set of fires has caught everybody by surprise. So this year, it's not so clear that the electric utilities have a real role in the car fire up near Whiskeytown, and which burnt part of downtown Redding. That was caused by a vehicle. The fires then in Napa and Lake counties that became the Mendocino fire were started by apparently a guy with a hammer. One fire, and the other was started by a motorcycle. So the fires come from all different sources. About 1 in 10 in California seems to have some utility involvement. But what we're seeing is more fires, more ferocious fires, more drought, 10 years of drought, low soil moisture conditions, winds that don't have any humidity. And so overall, the ferocity of these fires, I think, is what's caught people by surprise. So the fires that we've been seeing in Northern California somewhat resemble more the Santana wind fires that we used to see more commonly in Southern California, with wind speeds that never have been experienced before. So for the electric companies, where we actually rated the pole infrastructure to starting with winds at around with wind speeds averaging around 60 miles an hour, that's the design standard, that no longer holds. So the infrastructure that we've been putting in the ground throughout the state of California for 80 or 90 years clearly cannot meet the advancing impacts of climate change. So that means that we're going to have to begin to adapt fairly quickly to an entirely new and unprecedented set of conditions.
What's your view of what happened last year in the Santa Rosa and Napa fires?
We don't have a complete picture yet, and to the extent that I do know things that are part of an ongoing investigation at the CPUC, I can't really speak about them. We'll be releasing the results of our investigation. CAL FIRE has one set of rules that are in the California Public Resources Code. We have our own standards that are in the Public Utilities Code. To some extent, the CAL FIRE enforces to a hard and fast standard. The PUC has several broad standards that we will enforce to. Theirs is they have the ability to make referrals on criminal charges that are in the public code, the public resources code. We tend to use civil remedies. So there's differences as state agencies. At the same time, there are overlaps. That's one of the reasons why over the past 10 years, but particularly in the last 5 years since I came to the CPUC, we've been building very close relationship with CAL FIRE to the point of actually having legal agreements that specify how we will actually work on these issues together. Again, we have different legal codes, but we have overlaps in terms of what we do. So one feature that I point to is that in the last 5 years, we've been working very closely to create a new fire map of the state.
With CAL FIRE.
With CAL FIRE. And they have fire scientists, they have fire engineers, they have people who are in the field looking at fuel. We tend to look at utility infrastructure.
And let me pause you there. How much did you know about fire, forest science, fire science coming into this job?
Me? Nothing. I knew about energy policy.
And so
I know about infrastructure.
And CAL FIRE now is telling you that 44% of the state's landmass is in a high-risk area. And you have amazing statistics in terms of the network of wires and poles that cross over that area.
Well, when we started this process, they gave us an interim map, and it basically designated about 30% of the 17% of the state's land mass as being in a high fire hazard or extremely high fire hazard area. That's now grown to 44%. That's about 1.4 million structures, 4 million people. We expect that as people move more and more and more into these fire hazard areas, that'll be 5 million people by the end of this decade. So that's one of the other changes that we're seeing, is that people move more into this wildland urban interface at the same time that it is expanding, and the amount of fuel seems to be increasing.
What's your sense of responsibility for this WUI, the wildland urban interface, the responsibility of the safety of people in it?
Again, there are a number of overlaps between us and CAL FIRE. I think that there's a different piece of it that really is at the heart of what it is the Public Utilities Commission does, which is that we have in California law something that's described as the obligation to serve. So there was time when there was intense competition in the electric industry, but not everybody had access to it. And so in order to be more efficient and only have one set of poles on a street rather than three or four serving different customers, we created in California law what we call a monopoly. And that monopoly was a more efficient way to build very long, linear, and long-lived infrastructure, similar to the railroads. But it has to serve everybody. And we actually make the utilities build electric lines to serve communities that are building in the wildland urban interface.
With you saying that, and excuse me for the interruption, but I do want to go to a bit of your testimony from July 25th. This is you speaking at the conference committee hearing, and you are speaking exactly to this point.
So when people move further out from dense urban concentrations, their need and their demand for electricity and telecommunication infrastructure continues. We don't tell them to move there. We tell the utilities that you have an obligation to serve. You have to provide them with that infrastructure.
Might that change someday? Could you foresee a time when infrastructure can't follow where people move to and the risk is too dramatic?
Well, I talk about that. That will require legislative changes, but it'll require cultural changes. People expect that. We get more calls complaining about the fact that the utilities sometimes shut off power to areas that are at risk of fire or where there are high winds because they are concerned that their infrastructure might be creating a hazard. We get more calls about that than people call saying that they're concerned that that electricity infrastructure is being built in those high-risk areas. So people, they just have an expectation. It's built in. We all think and know that when you move someplace, you will get telecommunications, you will get electricity.
Yeah. When you were listing statistics and you said the number of housing units and people that live in the risk area, one fact that's gotten some attention is that you say you have 1 million wooden poles in that area or telephone poles?
There's more like 2 million wooden poles. Poles are very important. They are the best buy in all of your infrastructure in the state of California. They bring you not only electricity, but they also bring you two or three types of telecommunications and sometimes competing telecommunications. So you can get internet, you can get voice, and you can get content, as in AT&T's U-verse or Comcast's Infinity. So Xfinity.
But you also say that these are the biggest challenge for the PUC.
Well, we have a lot of challenges. We cover Lyft and Uber. We cover railroads. We cover light rail. We cover certain kinds
of buses. Is there a dilemma with the poles then?
Well, if you continue to build new housing out into wildland areas that are subject to fire risk, And people have a right to have telecommunications and electricity, and we continue to build poles and wires, there's going to be conflicts. There's going to be risk.
I think we've spent the first part of this conversation laying out somewhat of the new job in front of the PUC in this new normal era now of wildfires. But there's a lot of legislative focus at the state capitol right now, and I'll let everyone know that I'm talking with the president of the California Public Utilities Commission, Michael Picker. So let me shift to some of the legislative focus, and that is, do you support the governor's and PG&E's proposal to change the liability laws?
Well, it's not clear to me that everybody speaks about things in the same way, but we definitely think that the governor has a reasonable package of increasing the protections and starting to figure out what's the right way to share liability for this increased fire risk from utilities. It doesn't actually help with the risk from these fires that are started by other sources, however.
Is some part of the governor's proposal already DOA? Some of it is alive and some of it people are just turning away from already, but not publicly.
I think that there are a lot of ways that the legislature could approach this. The governor laid out a package that makes sense to me. But as to what happens this week and next week, you got me. I don't try to judge the legislature in advance.
You know that critics say that package is to some degree a bailout for PG&E.
Well, the piece that people say that about is this concept of inverse condemnation. And that's court-made law based on the state constitution. And so the reason that the courts made the utilities the first payer is that they had sort of a flawed notion, but they also had a problem, which is they don't want all these claims to end up in the superior courts. It clogs up everything else the superior courts do. So what they said is the first payor in any case where there's any involvement of utility infrastructure in starting a fire will be the utilities. They pay everybody off, then they go collect from everybody else, and if there's any residual expense, then they go collect that from ratepayers. So that's been the way it's been for 80 or 90 years. It doesn't work that way in other places. It's usually the insurance company who are their first payers. So when I look at this, what I see is very large interest groups all pointing fingers at each other saying, well, you should pay first. That's what I see.
Meanwhile, lawmakers are discussing the question of whether utilities could go insolvent because of liability to wildfires. But then the bankruptcy talk could be a bluff too, couldn't it?
I tend to think that bankruptcy does not necessarily mean the only solution. I think that what I do fear is that there will be cash shortfalls. So if a utility has to pay a lot of these claims, but they can't recover their costs except over a longer period of time, then that means that there's a lot of money going out now, but they don't collect except for a long period of time. Usually what the utilities do, because that's a pretty common situation for a utility, they spend a lot of money on infrastructure, then they collect it through rates over time, is that they borrow money. If, in fact, there's a cash shortfall, as some utilities seem to be experiencing, PG&E has missed two shareholder payments, all those shareholders, all those bondholders get quite nervous. And what happens is share prices drop and bond costs go up. When that happens, it goes to ratepayers. It always goes there. And I worry that in this era of potential cash shortfalls, that some of the utilities may come back to us and say, look, you know, we're really having a hard time raising money. The cost of capital is going up. We're going to postpone building new battery storage or new electrification of transportation because we had to tend to the core mission of serving customers. So those, I think, are pretty likely cases that we may see. But a utility could decide that rather than being the first payor, they'll go to a court. They're going to say, we want to file a form of bankruptcy. You figure out who gets paid. So you go back to the same thing. But it probably will happen in federal court rather than state courts, because the state courts have already said, we don't want that. We're not having any of that. We don't want to have to settle this stuff. So if it goes to the federal courts, that's a different kettle of fish for Californians.
What do you think ultimately is right in terms of liability? Is there a sharing formula that seems to make sense to you?
Well, I'm more of an infrastructure person, and so the morality of liability law is really tough for me to address. I can't think of it that way. It's how do we build the infrastructure that we need for Californians to continue to prosper? How do we build the infrastructure we need to make the state go? I frankly think that if we want the utilities to continue to play that function of borrowing money cheap and getting infrastructure to scale really fast, we're going to have to pay some attention to how they actually can borrow to do those things that the state of California needs them to do. So it's a much more functional perspective on it. I think that as local governments make decisions about putting new housing and new communities in high fire hazard areas, they have to think carefully about whether they want to expand that risk. If they make the choice to do that, do they bear some of the liability?
So zoning laws and building codes are critical.
Right. If, in fact, climate change is a piece of this, should we start to think about how we share risk and liability differently? Do we need to have a fund that covers the massive kinds of damages that come with a changing climate and changing environmental impacts from that climate?
If, in fact, climate change is part of this? Do you want to clarify why you're making the statement that way? Are you questioning the science?
I am not questioning the science. But in any given event, it's not always easy to say that a specific weather event, a specific windstorm, is related to the changes in climate. I think that that's a challenge. However, climate scientists are saying that these recent fires are attributable to climate change. That's a distinction that I think we have to be very careful about, because we don't want to allow people to use climate as an excuse for failure to do everything that they can and should do.
I do want to return to one point. Just as you were mapping out your view from an infrastructure and your background from an infrastructure standpoint, earlier in this conversation we were talking about the fact that fire science and forest management wasn't your arena anyway. Doesn't this speak to the changing role and the nimbleness that CPUC has to have? And maybe what we need is an overall fire institute where all this collaboration and communication addresses this major problem.
Well, it's just human nature to focus on the last thing that happened. It tends to really focus our attention. And I think that these risks that we're seeing from fires are only one of the several kinds of hazards that are likely to come as we see advancing climate change. And so the California Coastal Commission, responding to a mandate from the legislature to begin to plan adaptation for changing climate, started to look at sea level rise and started to say that coastal communities shouldn't build in some lower areas. That's created a huge backlash in portions of coastal Southern California. I think that flooding and sea level rise are going to be an issue here in Northern California. We know that less precipitation will fall and continue to be held in the Sierras as snow. That snow is a storage facility. It prevents early flooding, but right. It also helps us with water throughout the year. I think all these things are issues that we have to address at the same time.
We're out of time here. I haven't noted that you have made dramatic changes in de-energizing distribution lines during windstorms. You've talked about the collaborative effort, the wildfire response. Can you ever do enough to keep people safe now?
I worry that as hard as we've worked over the last few years with CAL FIRE to develop better fire maps and a very expensive new vegetation program that's the toughest in the nation, the amount of time we spent looking at the what changes they've made in Australia, both we at the PUC and our counterparts in Australia think that we are still behind the pace of change in the climate and conditions that we're trying to protect people against.
I appreciate your time, Commissioner Picker. I'm glad we had this conversation. I look forward to more dialogue as this continues for us.
Give me a call. I'd love to come back. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That is the president of the California Public Utilities Commission, Michael Picker. We'll post links to related stories. And again, those hearings continue at the state capitol, which our capitol team continues to cover in our state government news as well. It's all at capradio.org. And this is Insight on Cap Radio.